Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Up North News with Pat Kreitlow starts now.
Well, here we are, and good morning. Again, we survived, and glad to tell the tales afterwards. Welcome to another beautiful sunny day from our studios on Lake Wissota in the state of Wisconsin, as we share some headlines, some opinions, some guests, some general foolishness on this Thursday, October 20th, 19 days until Election Day. And remember, whatever kind of day you're having right now, you're probably having a better day than Liz Truss, who resigned minutes ago as prime minister, lasted as prime minister of Great Britain for 44 days, smashing the previous shortest tenure held by a guy who only stopped being prime minister in 1829 after 119 days because he died. So if time allows, we will talk later about how that country's right-leaning party has the good sense of a goose to understand that you can talk about slashing taxes, but if you ain't got a way to pay for the things you still know need to be done, you're going to be outed as a fiscal fraud. And perhaps the right-leaning party here could learn that, or just cause an immense budget crisis if they were to take control of things next year. We'll talk about some of that this morning with Joe Zepecki, our friend and political analyst here in Wisconsin, and from Kiev Akil out in Los Angeles, Courier Newsroom national correspondent. If you want to reach the show, our email address is radio@upnorthnewswi.com. Or you can use the phone, say good morning to Aaron Zomers at 715-388-7155, just like this. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, Pat.
See you. It takes a sec, and then he picks up the phone and it actually says hello back. How are you?
Doing pretty well this morning. A little more tired than usual. Still didn't crack out coffee, though. I normally don't have any coffee in the morning.
You don't have any coffee in the morning?
No.
What are you powered on?
I don't know. Sleep, I guess. But.
You know, the question just kind of answered itself right there, you know, right there in the tone of his voice. I have to tell you, and Aaron, thank you so much for all your patience yesterday for our first ever Live from the Kitchen Table edition with Kirk Bangsted and Kristen Lyerly. I am promising you a more technically adequate show today.
Well, there we go. I think that won't be too difficult to beat that. However, there were technical issues yesterday, but the show still went very well, I think.
Oh, I had a lot of fun, and I have to tell you that, again, having Kirk Bangsted and Kristen Lyerly all together in the same room for the first time was a lot of fun, and like I said, we stayed up way too late the night before, finally, you know, getting to meet each other, and so I wanted so bad to go to bed at 7:30 last night by the time they left and everything had been cleaned up. And I thought, no, that would be a mistake. 8:30, however, was not a mistake. So 8:30, I was out and had no problem getting up and at them today. But, you know, that's how it is when you have company over. And what is the saying we used to give to our kids all the time? Too much ha-ha leads to boo-hoo. So there was a little boo-hoo last night, but everything is back in order. We've got a fairly nice day today, 50s across much of the state, then 60s on Friday and Saturday. And we actually are getting back into the 70s. Some places on Saturday, more places on Sunday. So we are going to get one more bit of a warm up. From what I saw of all the local forecasts out there, though, we're in the middle of this big dip in the jet stream, which allows all this cold air to pour down. It's going to fix itself, but only for a couple of days. And then I guess the middle of next week is going to be another big dip in the jet stream. And once again, let all that cold air from Canada come on down here. So what's the cure for cold air? I guess we'd call it high heat. That takes us to Josh Hader. We don't have the Milwaukee Brewers to root for anymore, but I still think a big chunk of Wisconsin actually has just adopted Josh Hader and is going to root for him, you know, via the Padres, because it wasn't like there was any big public outcry to trade him away. You know, I'm sure it disrupted his life immensely, having his first child had just been born and such. He really was struggling right before he left the Brewers. He really was struggling when he got to San Diego. But boy, has he found his groove. He had a 1-2-3 ninth inning last night to close out game two of the National League Championship Series against the Phillies. So that series is tied at one game apiece. And the article from MLB.com notes that Hader hit 100 miles an hour on the radar during that ninth inning last night. It marked the sixth time in this postseason that Hader has thrown 100 miles an hour or greater. And prior to this postseason, if it sounds like a surprise, it's because it is. Prior to this postseason, Hader hit 100 miles an hour or greater with his fastball exactly zero times. He's consistently been in the high 90s, but apparently he made some mechanical tweaks, maybe as a result of the slump that he had over the summer. Maybe he says it's part of the adrenaline as well, but Josh Hader is hitting triple digits on the radar gun, and good for him, because that's going to make for a great series. All the postseason baseball has been fun so far. Obviously wish the Brewers were in, but we at least have a bit of a hometown hero, shall we say, to look at as we go through the National League Championship Series here. All right. Well, coming up, Joe Zepecki is going to help talk to us about some of the issues going on in these final, 19 days until Election Day. So that's coming up right after this break. You're up north. Going today, I think that'll be just fine. Welcome back. It's Thursday morning. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreidlow, joined now by Joe Zepecki. How are you this morning?
I'm good. I'm trying to figure out whether the head of lettuce is now the Prime Minister of England.
Forgotten about the head of lettuce. Oh my goodness. See, I was prepping for the show and this all happened about 30 minutes ago. So I saw the text coming across, but I haven't been able to turn on the TV. So I don't know. I'm sure that live feed of the head of lettuce is one of the most watched things on planet Earth right now. Good Lord.
Well, I know the head of lettuce is having a little bit of a party. There's some disco lights. I'm not clear on how the succession works over there.
Oh my goodness. That's just amazing. Let me, one observation that I have, and keep in mind that, when it comes to democracy and, all sorts of forms of representative government, there is no one single way. There certainly is no one single right way, as we found out. There's hiccups in every system. But I want to say that from the 3 years that I lived, on an island in the Caribbean, which was a British territory, and being subjected to the British political system, and of course, there were a lot of Canadians there that have a similar system, it's almost refreshing to not know when your next election is going to be, by and large, and that when a new election is called, either a vote of no confidence or the government calls it on themselves, you're only talking like maybe 4 to 6 weeks of campaigning, not 9 months to 2 years. I think it's something we really ought to consider, Joe.
A sign of a healthy democracy that they can handle their business in 4 to 6 weeks, as opposed to, I mean, God, the day after the midterms, someone is going to announce they're running for president in 2024 here in America. That's
probably
just no way, five letters
in his name. And although it might be Pence instead of Trump, right. But Pence yesterday was talking about, maybe he'll be the one to run.
Or Biden. There's a lot of five letter potential candidates for 2024.
Well, hey, whatever stops the four-letter words that we've all been throwing at one another. We're talking to Joe Zepecki on this Thursday, October 20th at Up North News, and a lot of topics to cover as we head into these final 19 days. And so setting aside the British Prime Minister, there's enough stuff here at home. And, one scarcely knows where to start, but I want to start with something relatively new, just so I can make this observation about Scott Walker and Brad Schimmel. There's a controversy now about absentee voting and, you know, what constitutes a complete address on the witness envelope that you fill out, you know, on your absentee ballot, like I've got here. Mm-hmm. And as a result, you know, people are confused. They were made further confused by the ruling of a Waukesha County judge that tried to, you know, crack down further and frankly make it easier to throw out your vote if you didn't get your address completely right on the ballot. Now it's led to a union sending cease and desist letters to some cities because they think those cities are being too restrictive. My point is this, Joe, that Waukesha County judge is Brad Schimmel, the former Republican Attorney General under Scott Walker. And Scott Walker continues to interfere in democracy by conspiring with Fred Prehn to stay on the Department of Natural Resources board and others. And I mean, when we talk about, you know, people who are basically, they love to talk about law and order, but when it comes to respecting the voters and the rule of law, Scott Walker, Brad Schimmel, and others have already proven their absolute disdain for democracy.
Yeah, I also think they know not what they do and what the implications are, right? There's nothing inherently democratic about the voter who, in the midst of filling out their envelope to send back their absentee ballot, is interrupted by a kid who fell down and skinned their knee outside, and so they leave off the last digit of the zip code. That's not a Democrat problem. It's not a Republican problem. It's a thing that happens. And when you live in a municipality where everybody has the same zip code, you're telling me you're going to disqualify somebody and not count their ballot because they forgot to put the final digit of their zip code on? I mean, give me a break.
Oh, I know. Somebody mentioned in one of the articles that, well, you know, there is more than one Green Bay in the country, so that's why they need to have the zip. Are you kidding me? Do we really think that, and I don't know what state it is, do we think somebody from Green Bay, Montana is going to try to stuff the ballot box? I mean, it's just so completely unrealistic.
Yeah, I think the message has to be, you know, voting is easier than a lot of people give it credit for, or, you know, sort of understand if they haven't done it before. Take your time, take a little extra half beat this year before you put that thing in the mailbox. Just make sure it's filled out correctly. We are seeing every indication that turnout is going to be sky high. You don't want to miss this election. You want to have a say in charting the future of our state and this country. And so whether that's voting absentee by mail, and by the way, those votes are coming in every day. There's more than 180,000 Wisconsinites who have already voted. And I should note, a very, very, very low, less than like a 0.5% rate of ballots that are being flagged as having problems. And the best news about those ballots coming in early, if they have a problem, is there's time to fix it. So if you vote absentee by mail, do not delay. Get that thing postmarked and back to your local clerk. Early voting in person starts next week. Another way that you can make sure that you participate and your voice is heard. And then, of course, 19 days from now, we'll have Election Day. So lots of ways to participate. No excuse for sitting this out. There's too much on the line.
Absolutely. And in talking about, the anti-democracy, stances and positions and quotes coming from people, you know, like Brad Schimmel and Scott Walker, we can't, of course, that's all just set up for Ron Johnson, who himself has talked about, you know, abolishing or ignoring the Wisconsin Elections Commission, the role he played on January 6th. And, you know, we learned something new this week in the way that, you know, his campaign is, you know, quote unquote, working with, you know, which means they're paying money to a law firm that also, you know, may have a role in what's happening with January 6th. And, you know, that relationship, Joe, just strikes some people as suspicious.
Let's break this down. So it is clear that after the June disclosure by the Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol, it is clear, you know, this is what, July, August, September, October, 4.5 months later, we still don't know what happened and what Ron Johnson's involvement was that day. There are some things we know, and let's run through a couple of them, including that in the days before January 6th, Ron Johnson announced, along with 10 other Republican senators, that he would vote against certifying electors from battleground states. He waved the red flag in front of a mob of insurrectionists who were descending on Washington, D.C. That much we know. We also know that the fake electors plot was central to the scheme by Trump and his lieutenants to prevent the peaceful transition of power. We know that on the morning of January 6th, after multiple versions of this story out of the mouth of Senator Ron Johnson, we now know that he was on the phone communicating with Jim Troupas, a Trump campaign lawyer. What we don't know is the content of those conversations. We don't know what they talked about. We know that with, you know, just mere minutes to go before the official proceedings began on January 6th, Ron Johnson was the inside man who they were trying to hand off the fake electors to so he could put them in the hands of Mike Pence. But we don't know what Troupas and Johnson talked about. So isn't it ironic that just weeks after we learn about Johnson's involvement on the day of January 6th, that for the first time in 12 years, Ron Johnson suddenly hires Jim Troupas and has now paid him tens of thousands of dollars for what? You know, apparently there's no FEC code for hush money. For I want the veil of attorney-client privilege to prevent this guy from telling authorities what role I played on January 6th. It stinks to high heaven. It screams some kind of cover-up. And we the people of Wisconsin deserve the truth and a full accounting. Unfortunately, my fear is that now that Johnson has, you know, paid for the silence of Attorney Troupas, we're not going to know for years and years and years, long after Ron Johnson's political future is decided.
That is the hell of it, is that, you know, with Watergate, for example, we had learned enough as a nation to know that, you know, Richard Nixon was too corrupt to stay in power. And then even more details came out later to show us just how bad it was. Unfortunately, as we become more numb in this area to, you know, the corruption of certain folks, we already know how much worse it is than Watergate. We know how bad it is, absolutely perilous to democracy. And yet you're right. We're going to learn much more after the fact. And Joe, it's only a personal observation on my part, but these headlines about, you know, voters are shrugging off January 6th concerns, again, I think is more of a failure of, you know, these newsrooms to actually communicate to the voters what exactly is happening, rather than just putting up a Ron Johnson denial or Ron Johnson saying, well, you know, the debate audience was packed with college students and that's why they laughed at me. It's more serious than that.
It really is. And I think there's a lot of blame to go around. I don't think you can say this is entirely the media's fault. I don't think you can say it's entirely the people's fault for not caring or for having these confounding, you know, survey responses where people say, you know, the threats to democracy are a serious concern, 65%. And, you know, what's the top issue on your mind this election season? And then it's like threats to democracy, 6%. So we care. We apparently don't care enough. It is a problem. I also would submit that there's something going on out there. It's under the surface. We know that polling is broken in this country. I'm not convinced that you're not going to hear a mighty roar from people concerned about the future of our democracy this election day.
I think that is borne out in the five special congressional elections since the Dobbs decision, certainly Kansas. And I know people have said, well, you know, more time has passed and so passions have cooled a bit. I'm not at all convinced they have. And frankly, when you think about it, you know, when those two Marquette polls, there's no way Mandela Barnes was ever really up 7, and there's no way Ron Johnson was ever really up 6. I don't know if folks know this. This is Wisconsin. That just doesn't happen.
Correct. No,
it's not a dig on, you know, Charles Franklin or the poll or anything. It's just polls these days.
Yeah.
You know, you really have to not, you know, put all your stock into them.
Yeah, it's really tough. And it's particularly tough to identify people who have not been part of the process, who have been compelled to become part of the process. We saw this as recently as 2016, where tens of thousands of Wisconsinites who had sort of opted out of our politics said, no, you know what, Trump's my guy. And they decided to participate. You're fooling yourself if you don't think that there's tens of thousands of Wisconsinites who the Dobbs decision woke up from a slumber and have made them go, you know what, I can't take this for granted. I need to participate in my democracy. Those folks are coming out this time.
Oh, we saw that on Monday with the three women from Northern Door Activism. You know, and I mentioned yesterday, it actually spurred a phone call from my own mom, age 77, saying how much it warmed her heart to hear these women who had never been involved and were not only angered, but, you know, inspired to act and are looking to, you know, reach out to others and help inspire them to vote and facilitate voting. It's all been... you know, heartwarming that way. Whether it will be enough, of course, forgive the cliche, you know, but only time will tell. And that time is only 19 days away. So we'll talk more about that with Joseph Pecky on the other side of this break. Remember, follow us on social media, Up North News WI. Again, don't forget the WI. We'll be right back.
From Lake Wissota, once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
The answer I was asking Aaron earlier, I mean, if he doesn't drink coffee, what gets him going? And clearly it's this modern rock and roll music. Look, it's got this old man completely out of sorts here. But I think Joe might have had something to do with that as well. Joseph Pecky joins us on this Thursday morning as we head into the final 19 days of the campaign. Joe, I mentioned Ron Johnson and being laughed at the debate by, you know, what he said was college students who don't learn history. You know, again, just this, I refer to myself as an old man, but this is literally, you know, the cranky old man just lashing out and, you know, at the same time giving these answers that should frankly give more people pause.
The debate bingo card has a couple of squares you really don't want to have to check. One of them is the crowd laughs at you. The other is the crowd boos you loudly. Ron Johnson got both of those bingo squares checked off in his second debate with Lieutenant Governor Barnes. Was that last week? Oh, man. Time flies when you're having fun. And so the first one, I think that the laughed at, an incumbent United States senator who for a time was the chairman of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Government Oversight, stood on a debate stage and said, the FBI set me up. And that is where the laughter came in. It sounds like we might be able to get some audio on this, so you won't have to take our word for it. But I also think it's worth talking about the final answer of the night when he got booed, because there are some pretty easy questions when it comes to debates in modern American politics. And the easiest question of them all ought to be, please say something nice about your opponent.
Anything. It's a natural,
anything
if you're a
will
natural
do.
Human being, you can do that. Aaron, is that one handy about say something nice about Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes?
Mr. Barnes, you go first. What do you find admirable about your opponent?
Well, No, seriously, I do think, you know, the senator has proven to be a family man, and I think that's admirable. You know, that's absolutely to be respected. He speaks about his family. He's done a lot to provide for them. I absolutely respect that.
Mr. Johnson.
I mean, likewise, I appreciate the fact that Lieutenant Governor Barnes had loving parents, a school teacher, father worked third shift, so he had, you know, good upbringing. I guess what puzzles me about that is, with that upbringing, why is he turned against America? I mean, why does he find the founding of America awful?
It
puzzles me.
He said something admirable.
Absolutely. How does that even think to fall out of your mouth? You know,
if you lack class, then you can't help yourself. I mean, listen, that was as spirited a debate as you will see. You know, those were not like the political equivalent of, you know, throwing an elbow. They were haymakers back and forth between those two gentlemen on Thursday. But that does not excuse flubbing the easiest question in the history of debates. It does not excuse, you know, going there and playing into the worst trope of all and listen, Senator Johnson is known for an ad hominem attack if he's known for nothing else. But to suggest that his opponent has turned against America at all, right, to ever suggest that, much less at the conclusion of a question that is name something you admire about your opponent, it's jaw-dropping, and we shouldn't forget it for these last 19 days. Frankly, we shouldn't forget it for the rest of history. There are editorials coming from Wisconsin newspapers in the last 2 weeks that are saying there has not been a worse United States senator from the great state of Wisconsin since Joe McCarthy. We all know that Joe McCarthy has gone down in history, and we still remember some of the lines like, at long last, sir, have you no decency? Mm-hmm. I think that applies to Senator Johnson in this case. At long last, sir, we've moved on from mouthwash and from gargling and from, you know, these were tourists and not traitors. And I wasn't afraid on January 6th, but maybe I would have been had they been Black Lives Matter protesters. We've moved on from all of that to perhaps reach the apotheosis of Ron Johnson, suggesting that his opponent had turned on America, an opponent who in that very debate and in campaign commercials all across this state says over and over again, my story is only possible in America. If that is not love and reverence for America, I don't know what is. Mandela Barnes was born in one of the worst zip codes in America, a young Black man, and the outcomes statistically for Black men born in the 53206 are awful. He has made it out and dedicated his life, whether or not he serves in the United States Senate, to making sure other people have those same opportunities. There is nothing more patriotic than that. And it is just shameful and classless that Ron Johnson took an absolute alley-oop of a debate question to suggest otherwise.
Rant but over. Remember, we live in an era where, you know, one of the punchlines is irony just died. And coming from Ron Johnson, who actually had some kind of a role in trying to overthrow an American election, to then accuse somebody else of hating America is probably one of the more blatant forms of projection we've ever seen in Wisconsin politics. Let's move on to the other the debate between Tim Michaels and Governor Tony Evers. And Joe, I won't bore you with once again telling folks the quotes that I found most outrageous from Tim Michaels and that I can't believe don't get more attention. You actually want to bring up one that I haven't since the debate, again about the abortion issue. For me, it's been a different aspect, the outrageous part about saying Evers favors killing babies that are born alive. You remind me that there was a question about something as, you know, dystopian as stopping cars at the border.
Clearly Tim Michaels, who has said on record his position on abortion is an exact mirror of Wisconsin's draconian 1849 law that does not even allow for exemptions in the case of rape or incest. He has said over and over again, that's his position. He and his advisors have been saying, you know, we're going to stand by our positions. We're not going to, you know, waffle on anything. And now it is clear in the closing days of this race that they know they are so out of the mainstream, out of step with Wisconsinites on this issue, that they're trying desperately to couch their extreme position in as good a light as possible, which is awfully hard to do. And so when this topic came up during the debate on Friday, for Michaels to sort of jump to, I'm not some radical who's going to be checking cars at the border if women have to go to other states to get abortions. Well, first, like, that wasn't really the question, sir.
Right.
And the notion of jumping to that, like, why would it even occur to you that someone could set up a checkpoint to prevent women from traveling across state lines if they are, you know, in need of an abortion because they have been raped, because they are the victim of incest? This is not a hypothetical. We are hearing about young victims, 12, 13, 14 years old, who are having to travel multiple states away from where they live because they have been a victim of one of the most heinous crimes imaginable. That is the post-Roe hellscape that is America. And for the Republican nominee for governor to stand up and try to assure people, don't worry, I won't be checking cars at the governor. What are we doing here, folks? I think you're kind of telling on yourself a little bit. So that really jumped out to me. You know, there were some folks who were a little bit critical of Governor Evers' performance. And, you know, my reaction to that is pretty straightforward. The people of Wisconsin didn't vote for Tony Evers because he's a silver-tongued, you know, wordsmith. And you don't have to be a silver-tongued wordsmith to stand up to a Republican legislature when it comes to the topic of women's health. You don't have to be a silver-tongued wordsmith when it comes to getting the state through a once-in-a-century pandemic over the opposition of that Republican legislature and every Republican in the state of Wisconsin. What you need to have is a backbone. Tony Evers has one. He has demonstrated that over and over again. And on all of the fights that we care about, we know that we can count on him to have that backbone and stand tall. I care a heck of a lot more about that than I do whether or not he's the smoothest politician when it comes to stringing 13 sentences together and, you know, in a row in a debate.
The debate was moderated by Jill Geisler, somebody who I absolutely respect and adore. She once was one of my instructors at a journalism leadership forum, and she always loves to use the line "leaders lead." And that was, I used that in my editorial yesterday about Governor Evers on crime. You've got, you know, Tim Michaels literally saying, "I'm going to tell the bad guys there's a new sheriff in town." All that was missing
that
was the finger guns going pew, pew, you know. Whereas Evers had the ideas and would have done even more if the Republican legislature weren't so devoted to being the ones to actually, you know, defund police and other local services. But staying on the topic of abortion, you also have an attorney general's race that probably would get more attention in any other time, except that we have these contentious Senate and gubernatorial runs. And you have a Republican candidate for attorney general, Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Toney. I mean, I'm just going to set you up with the headline out of the Milwaukee Journal. Republican Wisconsin Attorney General candidate Eric Toney says district attorneys should cross county lines to prosecute abortion cases. What kind of dark ages is he and some other folks, what are they trying to drag us into here?
Are you familiar with the "hold my beer" meme? That's all I can think of here is, you know, you've got Tim Michaels. My position is the 1849 law, no exception for rape or incest. Ron Johnson on record supporting multiple national abortion bans, including ones that do not have any exceptions for rape or incest. And so as the third, you know, straight white guy running statewide on the Republican ticket, Eric Toney's only hope is to say, "Hold my beer, guys. I can find a way to out crazy both of you," and suggest in a debate with Democrat Josh Call that he would support district attorneys whose jurisdiction under Wisconsin law is limited to the counties in which they are serving as district attorney. And the only exception to that is, let's say the Milwaukee County District Attorney requests that the Waukesha County District Attorney comes in on a special case. You can do that. But jurisdictionally, you are limited as a district attorney. To suggest that, you know, in Milwaukee or Dane, where district attorneys have said, you know what, we have law enforcement challenges, we have bad guys and criminals we need to go after, that's where we're going to use the resources of our office, and therefore we will not be prosecuting doctors or women in terms of criminalizing abortion. For Eric Toney, running to be the state's, air quotes, top cop, to suggest that any district attorney who disagrees with the allocation of resources of a district, of a DA in another county, can just swoop in and criminalize abortions, arrest doctors for performing an abortion, even in the case of rape or incest, is so beyond the pale. I don't know how else to describe it other than as a real "hold my beer" moment. Because if we don't try to find some humor in this, you're right, we're just all going to bury our heads in our hands and wonder how close we are to living the Handmaid's Tale in our real lives. It is really scary stuff. And I don't mean to sound alarmist, but it's all on the line, folks. If Tim Michaels is governor, if this Republican group of legislatures controls the legislature, which they're going to, if Republican Eric Toney is the attorney general, forget about it. There will not be safe access to reproductive health care. You will have the government up in your business when you are pregnant. And if you need to consider, you know, alternate options to preserve your ability to have kids later, for example. That is all coming if Democrats don't win these races in just a couple of weeks.
Hey, we're going to cheat you out of time to talk about the Protect Our Care bus tour. Can you stick around after the break, or do you have to run out?
Absolutely. I would love to.
Why don't you do that? Because that I don't want to, you know, that deserves some attention. We have talked, there are just so many issues. And one of them is the healthcare options of people, not just having Social Security or Medicare ended, but Ron Johnson's ongoing, you know, call to revisit overturning the Affordable Care Act and what have you. And some of the campaigning that gets done isn't just by candidates. It's folks like our friend Kristen Lierley, Joe here, and others who are getting around the state and talking to people about what's at stake on a particular issue. And for, you know, Kristen, it's about, you know, some women's health care and abortion rights overall. But then there's just general health care that is going to be affected, you know, one way or the other by a governor and a legislature that either want to expand your options or restrict them. So we'll talk to Joe more about that on the other side of this break. Follow us online at upnorthnewswi.com. Another commercial there for the parent company. We'll be back right after this. You're Up North. Joe Zepecki overtime. There is just way too much stuff to confine to two segments. So Joe's back with us to talk a bit about something that's been keeping him busy. Of the many hats that you wear, one is helping a group called Protect Our Care, which has been around for a good long time, ever since it became clear that the Affordable Care Act was going to be under a perpetual, you know, state of attack from Republicans who couldn't just accept that, you know, we actually should do something about affordable health care in this country. So, Joe, tell us a bit about the group and about the bus tour. That it's a national bus tour, but wound its way through Wisconsin recently.
It is a national bus tour. Care Force One, we call it. It is the lower costs, better care bus tour. It's going to hit more than 20 states, travel more than 12,000 miles by the time all is said and done. But last week, we were here in Wisconsin. We had three different stops. Really great turnout among people who support the Affordable Care Act and the Inflation Reduction Act, which built on the ACA by doing things like finally ending the ban on Medicare, which was prevented for, you know, 30 years from negotiating for lower drug costs. The Inflation Reduction Act caps the cost of insulin for seniors on Medicare at $35 a month. It extends the advanced premium tax credits, which ensure that if you are making under a certain amount, I think it's around $150,000, you don't pay more than 8.5% of your income for a monthly plan on Obamacare. And so we had Senator Tammy Baldwin, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, Attorney General Josh Call, Governor Tony Evers, State Senator Brad Paff, State Representative Sarah Rodriguez, a real lineup of heavy hitters at stops in Milwaukee and Green Bay and Eau Claire to talk about the help that is on the way, thanks to Democrats in Congress and Joe Biden, who passed the Inflation Reduction Act. You know, Republicans love to talk about inflation and how it's hurting Wisconsin families. They just don't want to actually take any votes that do anything about it. The Inflation Reduction Act is going to lower healthcare costs by thousands of dollars a year for Wisconsin families. That makes a difference amid inflation. And, you know, and beyond the, you know, the headliners and the politicians and the candidates who were able to join the tour, what I really want to talk about are the just ordinary Wisconsinites with really moving healthcare stories. We heard from Johnny in Milwaukee, whose mother-in-law is on Medicare, and she requires oxygen all the time. She's also a type 1 diabetic. This is going to save their family money every single year by capping her insulin costs and capping her out-of-pocket costs at $2,000. We heard from Vic in Green Bay, who, you know, has a lot of pre-existing conditions based on a very, very serious auto accident he was in years ago. Because of the extension of the advanced premium tax credits, he's going to be able to afford a good health insurance plan for at least the next 3 years. We heard from Julia in Eau Claire, who actually has to limit her hours. She's an early childhood education and health and child care provider, but because of the rules around Badger Care, which is the Medicaid program in our state, she has to limit her hours so she doesn't make too much money, because if she was kicked off of Badger Care, she wouldn't be able to afford the medications she needs. And so, you know, there we talk about Republicans continuing to refuse to expand Badger Care, even though Tony Evers and every Democrat in the legislature wants to do it. And so this wasn't just about a big fancy bus. It wasn't just about, you know, politicians coming out to, you know, say a few words about the Affordable Care Act or the Inflation Reduction Act. It was about the stories we heard and about the, you know, extraordinary impact that what happens in Washington, D.C. is going to have on the lives of ordinary Wisconsinites. The way I look at it, every single one of those speakers was speaking for thousands, if not tens of thousands, of Wisconsinites with a story similar to theirs. This stuff matters. It's not a game. It's not about who's up and who's down. It's about the lives of our neighbors and community members who need just a little bit of extra help. They're not asking for a handout. They just need a little bit extra help to make sure they can maximize their potential. That's what the Inflation Reduction Act and the Affordable Care Act help do.
And this really gets to something that I believe in firmly about the competency of public service and the need to recognize the targeted shades of gray area where you can be more effective as a lawmaker and as a leader, you know, compared to a one size fits all mentality, like what you heard with Tim Michaels last week saying, I'm going to attack inflation by putting more money into people's pockets. In other words, a big fat tax cut that disproportionately helps the very rich. And that just shows, he says, I understand macroeconomics. No, you don't, because all the money in your pocket can't fill an empty shelf. You need to target what you're doing in terms of helping increase supply, helping manufacturing, or helping with the tax credits that can help people with their health care or with affording a home or affording college or things like that. You know, the broad brush just slash spending, or let's take his answer about, you know, the surplus. You know, the surplus should just be returned to people. I've always said, no, it shouldn't, because I don't fill potholes. And I say to whoever I'm talking to, neither do you. I didn't see you fill a pothole today. That's right. Money has to be used for the things that we pay taxes for, including things that help us directly, but also, you know, things that don't necessarily. And that takes me to another one of targeted funds coming to Wisconsin. And in this case, it's the bipartisan infrastructure law, a new announcement that Wisconsin's going to get more than $140 million in new funding to help with drinking water and wastewater systems all over the state. It's going to go into a revolving loan fund so that the money is loaned out to communities. They make necessary repairs and upgrades, then they pay the money back, and that money can then be used again by another community. Again, it sounds so much more complex and boring than just cut taxes. But that's what effective public service is, Joe.
It really is. And I want to point out, although it is called the bipartisan infrastructure law, not a single Wisconsin Republican could bring themselves to vote for it. Ron Johnson didn't. Our members of Congress didn't. 17 of Ron Johnson's colleagues who are Republicans did, including Mitch McConnell. But Ron Johnson could not bring himself to vote for a bipartisan infrastructure deal. It just kind of shows, once again, this is not a guy who's interested in working for the people of Wisconsin. And on issue after issue, you see it. And so that's what's at stake. Do you want another senator who's going to go to Washington and work for working families and Wisconsin's middle class? Or do you want somebody who's mostly concerned with how much can I cut taxes for my big donors and for those at the top like me? I think you're going to see some more reporting on the advantages that Johnson and his family have seen in the next couple of days. So stay tuned for that. We'll get to end with a little tease here.
Yeah. And speaking of advantaged families, I mean, imagine being somebody like Tim Michaels who can just call your local police force, you know, on any given whim that suits you. First off, there's plenty of people that have a healthy fear of police for certain reasons, but for him, it's just, they're just his errand boys. And that just kind of made me chuckle in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, well, Tim Michaels thinks macroeconomics is his wallet is bigger than yours, for starters. But I also, my favorite in that Dan Bice story was a welfare check that he called for on his wife, who was apparently in the middle of a 3-hour nap. That's how you know it must be exhausting being married to Tim Michaels. Keep that in mind, Wisconsin.
And we will end on that note. Joe Zepecki, thanks for sticking around. Good to talk to you.
You bet, man.
Enjoy
we'll
the rest
next week.
Of your day. All right. Talk to you later. And we'll be back after this top of the hour break. You're up north.